This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Now, I'm going to take you back in time here a little bit. Before you went to school and before you got involved in this profession, were you ever asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? And what was the answer, Dr. Z?
Oh, my gosh. The answer changed so much. I know when I was younger, under 10, because, of course, I've always been a huge nerd, apparently, I wanted to be an Egyptologist. I was always fascinated by Egypt, and I think that does kind of connect to what I do now, is that I always really love the mythology and the combination of their gods and goddesses, a lot of them having both animal and human characteristics. Then I wanted to be a reporter, which is actually why I originally went to school to be a journalist. I knew I wanted to write in some capacity and to learn and to read, but in terms of even getting a PhD in literature, and certainly what I am doing now with my career, was not something I ever would have expected when I was younger, or quite frankly, would have felt I could do. And this is maybe my own perspective, and I think things are changing, but when I was growing up, I loved reading like scary stories to tell in the dark, and Stephen King when I was like in fourth and fifth grade, and I was really absorbing all this sci-fi and this horror, but it was something I always did like privately or with my family. I never felt like, with the exception of, you know, maybe Pokemon cards or something, that I could talk about monsters and horror with my friends because it wasn't seen as girly in a lot of ways. So, and I think that's changing now, and I sincerely hope that my work and the work of other female and non-binary individuals out there talking about horror can encourage people to do what they want. I wish I could have, you know, said however many years ago that, yeah, I want to be an undead expert, or I want to have a show about monsters. I wish I could have said that, but my career has definitely taken a path that I would not have expected, safe to say.
Is there a book in your future?
Funny you should mention that. I can't say too much about it at the moment, but I am actually working on two book projects right now. Again, very early on stages, but one of them would be for a more public audience that I would actually be doing in collaboration with an amazing illustrator. So that would be something really fun. And then, yes, I am also working on turning my dissertation about the undead before Dracula and before 1850, basically, as a book. So hopefully, yeah, in the next couple of years, I'll be having a few books coming out.
Well, then they can buy the book in Hollywood and turn it into some kind of monster film.
Hey, if that funds me to be able to keep doing Monstrum for forever and actually talking about these stories more in depth, they can have it.
That must be a really fun show to do. What's it like, actually, to work with these people? And because you're busy enough with doing your teaching, so what drives you to do this?
Two things. I'm really stubborn and really passionate about it. I was actually discouraged really early on in my PhD career about pursuing the undead. I was actually told by a fairly prominent individual in the field that I would not be able to have a career if I continued to talk about things like vampires and zombies in the undead, which I wish I could respond like, look at me now. But I sort of decided to ignore that and to write what I really loved to do, which just happens to be monsters. So that's what keeps me going. In terms of working on the show, it is, as I said before, a labor of love because it does take so much time and energy. A general outline of how the show works is I'll come up with a list of monsters and pitch them to my amazing production team, and we'll decide on a couple for me to explore further. And ideally, it doesn't always work this way, I'll spend at least 2 weeks of research on each episode before I even attempt to write it. We go through, depends, sometimes two, sometimes four or five variations of the script. And until COVID-19, I would then fly to Austin, Texas, to the production studio, and we would batch film, usually minimum three and sometimes up to six episodes at a time. And then I'd fly back and sometimes teach the next morning. So it definitely is a lot. And then, of course, from you know, actually me being on camera and writing the script, there are so many people behind the scenes in terms of editors and creative directors and producers and our amazing illustrator that really give the show so much texture and so much depth. And I'm just incredibly fortunate to not only be able to do what I love and to share it with the world, but to work with such an awesome and encouraging group of people in the process.
If it's not too personal, do you actually have a family life too?
I do have a family life. I was married earlier this year, and I have a bird, so that's currently what I do right now. Yeah, so it's a lot to balance, but I'm fortunate enough to have a supportive partner, a supportive family, and colleagues and friends. So
you have a bird. You don't have a dog. You have a bird.
No, just a bird. Her name is Archie, aka Captain Archimedes Ursula. She's quite the character, but no dog yet. In the future, for sure. But right now, with everything going on, the bird's a little bit more manageable.
Well, then again, you don't have to take the bird out.
Not on walks, but trust me, she has to come out every day multiple times because she's a bird. People understand this. Having any kind of like parrot or relatively intelligent bird is like having a puppy or a toddler. Like, they like routine. They like stimulation. You have to play with them. You have to talk to them. She's my own little monster, I guess you could say.
But maybe you should be writing a monster story next. I mean, a fictional story.
I've thought about it. I don't know what I would do now. There's just so many, I feel like, fantastic fictional storytellers other than myself. But my mom brought this to my attention like a couple months ago, which I'd kind of forgotten about, that for... So embarrassing. When I was a senior in high school, I was in honors, and we had the option to write, I don't know, something like a 20 or 30 page research paper or like a 50 or 70 page short story. And I was like, yes, I choose that. And I wrote a story about a zombie outbreak that happens in New York City because of the exposure of a bioweapon to the water source. And I actually talked to some people from the CDC way back when who were very kind, who at least at that time point told me that all the emergency supplies that New York City would actually need aren't housed on New York City, like on the island itself, because it's so expensive. So that kind of became the impetus for my novella. So I don't know if that's the route I would go if I did make a fictional story now, but you never know. Maybe when I get my first two books out, that maybe I will do something fictional.
Well, you always look at it this way. It's strange that when we have a lot of this fiction, especially now, you have a particularly large city that's isolated from the rest of the world or the rest of the country because of an outbreak of something. Mm-hmm. Something takes it over.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think it's changing a little bit because of how technology and like we can, you know, move with cars and airplanes. But I know I've seen a shift in zombies where more frequently it's less one specific isolated location and more like a global. Thinking World War Z, which is actually, I think, an underrated book and movie in some ways. But no, I think that pandemic and the idea of some kind of contagion and isolation, or isolation in general, harkens back to original ideas of Gothic horror, right? Where there's an inside and an outside. You know, the creepy old house or the spooky broken down abbey or something as being a place of evil or of horror. And I think now we've translated that in some ways to being broader locations. I know Slender Man, I think, is an excellent example of this, something like the digital Gothic, where the internet and technology itself has become the contagion factor or the place where horror resides. I know Stephen King wrote a book called Cell about that too, where people became zombified because of a cell signal sent through all electronic communication.
Well, then again, maybe the internet can be the next monster, mm-hmm. or it's the future Skynet.
Yeah.
It starts with the internet, then takes us over. And then we build these robotic beings, which we're doing already. Mm-hmm. We're starting on that. I mean, we've put artificial intelligence into our tiny mobile devices. Think about where we can take this. We are giving machine learning. So your iPhone has machine learning. If it's a recent version, it'll be incorporated into Macintosh computers. And then how far is that from building a full-scale robotic creature? Mm-hmm. We've got more to come with Dr. Z and Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hi, Bill Hyde here for Safe Places USA. If you're thinking it might be finally time to move out of a dangerous urban area to a safer place before things get worse, pay close attention. Because the feeling in your gut, the one telling you to get out, could save your life. Here's why. You can now find out where the safest places in this country are by going to SafePlacesUSA.com and checking out the Ultimate Relocation Manual. It's your personal guide to the tips, tricks, and techniques for relocating your family to the safest places in America. All broken down in 15 strategic, critical categories along with checklists and preparation sources. So if you want a clear path to getting out of Dodge, go to SafePlacesUSA.com. That's SafePlacesUSA.com. Use coupon code GCN and get half off the manual all this week. Plus, get the following books free with your Ultimate Relocation Manual. Pandemic Survival Secrets. Your Home, Your Fortress. All free this week at SafePlacesUSA.com.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine tablets, 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So what is the monster? Is it the physical creature? Is it the Bigfoot? Is it the Mothman? Is it the chupacabra? Is it something from ancient times? Is it the vampire? Or is it the digital universe that has immersed us? We are all immersed into this soup of radiation of some sort. Do you ever get in terms of monsters into ghost legends at all?
Yes, I have done some research on La Llorona and the Banshee, which are both female sort of ghostly apparition monsters, or the Banshee actually, maybe not necessarily. But yeah, I think the paranormal in terms of like spiritual and ghosts, I haven't touched on as much, but it's definitely something I want to explore in the future. I think so far the issue has just been a lot of the time it's so broad. I mean, some kind of ghost or spiritual apparition exists in virtually every culture, which I find fascinating and definitely want to explore more.
Of course, right now the biggest thing is it's always, almost always, it is someone who is dead who comes back to life.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ghost. It's not some creature from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's always related to something. It's related to the house you live in. It's mm-hmm. related to the building you go to. It's related to your family.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah, like the ghost in the machine, the idea that even a thought or an electronic digital code can infiltrate. Yeah, I think we have two different types of sort of ghosts. There is the spiritual revenant, the, you know, phantasm that appears from a dead person. And then there's the maybe idea that sort of permeates and can take over or infect someone.
Now, we've talked about this so much as being myths or what people report. Have you ever had an experience that... Well, was a little bit more than ordinary.
100%. I completely believe in ghosts and apparitions, and I have experienced a little bit of that myself. And I know some people who have had far more intense experiences. So yes, I have experienced the paranormal.
Tell us.
Okay, so long story short, the attic of my grandparents' house had been converted into bedrooms because they had so many children, as a good Catholic family back then did. So I'm sleeping in what we called the princess room, which was where all the girls wanted to sleep because it was very girly and frilly. And when I was younger, from, I don't know, 6 or 7, I would swear up and down, I'd wake up in the middle of the night every time I stayed there, and I wouldn't open my eyes because I knew, like, deep in my bones that if I had opened my eyes, I would have seen this young girl with a long white nightgown and black hair, or like dark hair, looking at me, like watching me sleep. And I never got the sense that she was bad or malevolent or evil in any way, maybe just like curious. But as much as I believe in the paranormal, I don't want to, or even then, I'm still too afraid to like actually see something. I don't know how my brain would compute that. So I never opened my eyes, but I always knew she was there. And this happened for years and years. And when I was in my early 20s, I was at a family reunion, two of my other female cousins. And keep in mind, I had never brought this up to anyone about this girl and my experience when I was sleeping, because I was convinced, since I read all the time and, you know, was into all these horror things, that everyone thought I had an overactive imagination and no one would believe me. But we were talking about another paranormal experience that happened in the family. And I said, you know, I always got the feeling when I was in the princess room that there was a little girl. And one of my cousins goes, with the white nightgown. And another cousin says, and the dark hair. And we all had never talked about it before. And we'd all had the same experience of this girl watching us, but it was never bad. And I think when we had that recognition, I went back years later and I was taking a nap in the room, and I felt her touch me. And it was kind of like, thanks, sorry I'm in your space, but I'm just going to sleep right now and we can like hang out later. And then the feeling was removed, like the, you know, the pressure and the coldness from my leg. And I haven't been back to my grandparents since, but who knows what would happen if I went back now.
What did they think of it? Or did you ever mention it to them?
To my grandparents?
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was my grandmother or some of my uncles did a little bit of digging, and it turned out that the very first people who would own the house, when it was much smaller and first built, they did have a daughter who was under the age of 10. I can't remember her exact age, who died at the hospital. I want to say from pneumonia, from some kind of, you know, illness. And even though she didn't die in the house, I believe in energies above everything else. So I think my personal belief about the paranormal, whether it's good or bad, that ghosts or spirits can return to places where they feel a strong emotional connection. For me, it made total sense that even if this girl died in a hospital, that she would return to her family home because that's where she had the most ties and most positive emotional experiences in her life.
So maybe you're one step removed from being a ghost hunter. That may be your next pursuit.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I've heard people say that I'm, you know, like the real life version of the X-Files or the brothers and the Supernatural brothers. And yeah, I've gotten a lot of that kind of stuff. I'll take it. I'm just doing what I love and having a good time doing it.
Ever see a UFO?
I have never seen any kind of unidentified flying object or aerial phenomenon. I did see some weird lights once, but we are in the desert, so I don't know half the time what's roaming around out here at night anyway.
Well, there's some pretty weird people out there, of course. I don't want to claim to be one of them because I don't go out at night. I'm just stay indoors. I'm a hermit. But my middle name is not Herman. That's something that's just too ancient of you. It's interesting, though, about the ghost experiences and where they happen, particularly in families. Mm-hmm. Certain families seem to have more than others, I would think. Did you look into that in doing your folklore research, whether specific religions, ethnic groups, genders, races?
It completely depends on the culture. There are some monsters, and I guess not necessarily monsters, but there are a lot of powerful spiritual healers and people of importance, like priestesses, in some older spiritual belief practices that believe that only women could tap into those resources. But again, some would also think only men. I know the Banshee, that actually is more connected to class and aristocracy. It was originally believed that only basically people who were rich enough to have an estate and like have the O apostrophe name, who were aristocratic, were the ones who had a Banshee attached to their family. I know that things like skinwalkers can curse certain lines of both genders or entire families. I think it really just depends on the monster and the area, but there are absolutely some beliefs in the paranormal and the supernatural connected to specific groups of people.
Well, I have known some Wiccans in my life, and there certainly are lots of interesting things one could say about that. I have one experience to give you after this. More to come with Dr. Z and Gene and Mandel. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Houseflies defecate every 4 to 5 minutes, spreading diseases and germs. Protect your food and your health with Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun, which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic, no batteries required, only $39.95. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Fire your fly swatter. Get your Bug Assault today. Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
As officials across the country pleaded with Americans to curb their enthusiasm for large 4th of July crowds, President Donald Trump brought the masses with a special evening of tribute and fireworks, and the president spoke of unity in the United States.
Not allow anyone to divide our citizens by race or background. We will not allow them to foment hate, discord, and distrust. We will hold fast and true to the sacred loyalties that link us all as neighbors, as Americans, and as patriots to build a future where every family is safe, where every child is surrounded by love, where every community has equal opportunity, and every citizen enjoys great and everlasting dignity.
Listen online anytime at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News. An Arizona woman fell to her death inside the Grand Canyon National Park. According to the National Park Service, the woman was taking photos with her family at Mather Point when she fell. The body was recovered by park rangers about 100 feet below the canyon's rim near the South Rim's Visitor Center. The Grand Canyon had 17 fatalities in 2018 and 19 in 2019. Grand Canyon National Park is one of the most popular tourist destinations in the U.S., drawing nearly 6.4 million visitors a year. An 8-year-old boy was killed in a shooting at an Alabama shopping mall that left 3 other people injured. Hoover Police Chief Nick DeZeris said the child was killed in the afternoon shooting at the River Chase Galleria. A girl and 2 other adults were hospitalized after the shooting. The Bessemer City School System identified the 8-year-old victim as Roy Tagayos Jr. He would have been a 3rd grader, and the school system described him as a smart child who was a jewel and big dreams of someday entering the music industry. This is USA Radio News.
Extendivite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispico's, 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So there's this Wiccan woman. Her name is Penny. I haven't heard from her in many years. But we knew her when we lived in Pennsylvania. And I was at a crossroads of my life. And I went over to her house and we had a conversation. And she did a tarot reading of me.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the quest was, what should I do next with my life? And she came up with something that later on turned to be fairly close to the mark. But what was weird about it is, I was just sitting on her couch. And then I fell asleep suddenly for 2 hours. Like all the energy had been drained from me. I woke up. I was fine. I apologized. And I guess she understood what I was doing. And went on my way and realized, or maybe took what she said as guidance. And that kind of explained what happened to me for the next like 10, 15 years or so.
Wow.
But the energy that I guess gave up during this was strange. I never had that happen to me before or since.
Do you know if Penny identified as an empath, someone who can feel or absorb other people's energies?
I don't recall that. I know we'd gone to some of her Wiccan ceremonies in the forest and everything, and everybody had a pleasant time and everything. But I do not recall her saying anything about being empathic. I, of course, may have forgotten. I just don't remember that.
Yeah,
it was the 70s, mid-70s.
Should we talk more about monsters? Well, I've got two more on the list here.
Ooh.
That are crossovers with the ufology and the aliens thing. Oh, and just a quick, going back to what you were talking about, the movie with the broadcast signal that turns people into, well, there's another movie called, right? Okay, there's another one called They Live by John Carpenter.
That also sounds very familiar.
Also use the theme of a signal being broadcast out by aliens to affect the consciousness of the population in a manner that kept them oblivious to their takeover of the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which my gut reaction to that would be a commentary on our continued reliance on technology and not understanding how satellites work. And yes, Fascinating. I'll definitely have to, it sounds familiar. I want to say that I've seen it, but I'm not positive.
It's pretty grade B, but it actually is, it's one of my favorites.
There's nothing wrong with a B movie or even a D movie. I still think it'd be entertaining.
You'll love it then because there's some wrestling scenes. And this won't be a spoiler, but it results in one of the non-believers finally being shown the truth.
Oh.
Because when they put on these special glasses, they can see through the signal to what really is happening. And it's really great because you can just see all of the social control. It's poetic in its own grade B kind of way. Gene just reminded me here that we've got something called the question bank.
Oh.
And we have a question from one of our forum participants named Marduk. He says, I'm currently reading Where the Footprints End. And I'm curious what her take is on you. I mean, that means your take on modern monster hunters discounting or ignoring some of the high strangeness in many monster encounters. I fully realize this is an attempt to gain traction with academia, but I'm curious how you see this fitting in with the larger historical narrative around monsters. Like I was trying to say a couple of times earlier, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and being so brave as to bring this into academia so that people can talk about it without fear.
Yeah, I think that they should. So you're welcome. I think what my research ultimately comes down to is storytelling and the importance of sharing our different perspectives. So the more, the merrier. And I always tell my students, if I expect certain things from you, then you can also expect them from me. And I will try to give back what, you know, other people are willing to share with me. But in terms of that question, like you said, we did touch on it a little bit, but I would actually say that I don't think the discrediting of modern monster, well, this depends on how you define modern monster hunters, but I think some...
Emily?
Yes.
Hang on a sec. Jean, are you there? Just answer the question over again, I guess, then. Dr. Z, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think we did talk about that a little bit, but my gut response would be that I don't necessarily think that maybe... I think I'd be sad if modern monster hunters or just people interested in superstition or folklore and horror in general are discrediting some of these unusual experiences to appear more academically legitimate. At least the way I approach this kind of work as an academic is that's just another story, another, you know, part of better understanding humanity. So I would actually say that including those kinds of strange experiences should be part of what we're doing. And I think that if there is a bigger turn towards not just first-person experience, but looking back at history and looking through how these stories have changed or not changed over time and looking at potential influencing factors, I think that's where the legitimacy comes in. So for me, it's not enough just to talk about, let's talk about, you know, the DNA evidence that proves that this quote-unquote Yeti fur is actually from a bear. Let's put that information in the story, but also talk about the older spiritual beliefs of when these creatures were sighted and how that played into Tibetan religion and cultural experiences in general. So I think to tell the best stories about monsters, we need to show both sides, the scientific and the supernatural, and everything in between. Maybe not necessarily to get answers, but to better understand why we're creating these stories.
Wow.
Well, Marta, based certainly on what you were telling us earlier, you must believe in the supernatural because you've had supernatural experiences.
I think that maybe has made me more open, but again, I don't think that my one, you know, experience with the paranormal can make me believe more or less in something like a dragon or the Loch Ness Monster or Bigfoot. I think it honestly comes down a lot more to my exposure to literature and movies, and actually, honestly, the training I've had as a scholar as being open to different types of perspectives that, at least I would like to think, make me good at this job. I just want to learn as much as I can from as many people and sources as I can and share that information with more people so they can ask their own questions.
During the course of your research, do you find much evidence of people just faking things to try to convey the impression that we have real life monsters and such?
All the time. Absolutely all the time, both with paranormal, you know, non-physical beings and also with physical beings. There are quite a few different famous monster types like mermaids, cyclops, the bunyip, dragons, all of the jackalopes, all these different kinds of, you know, creatures that are maybe misidentified fossils or in some cases are actually very clearly manufactured, you know, amalgamations of a misshapen fool's head here or, you know, foot from this that's sewn onto this other thing and presented as real. Yes, that, of course, occurs less often now, that type of, you know, physical creature evidence of a monster just because science has advanced so much. But there is absolutely a really fascinating history about taxidermy and manufactured evidence of different monsters that I think is awesome. And to, again, to me, that's just another part of where history and art and, you know, maybe greed come into play for these stories.
I don't think, and for the most part, when you fake these things, you make much money. I mean, even when you write factual books, so few books actually become bestsellers. We didn't look particularly at UFOs because I know some of the economics involved here in writing a UFO book or any book. That's, you know, commercial book, fact, or fiction. There's not a lot of money in it, as you probably realize, unless you are one of this rarefied atmosphere of people who write best-selling books and work for a few years and suddenly their bank account grows tremendously. For the rest of us, when we write books, and I've written a few, Dr. Z joins us for one more segment with Dr. Z and Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
I'm here with Scott Youseum, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Hi, this is James Fox. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We're joined here by the one and only Dr. Z, Dr. Emily Zarka. Now, while you guys were talking about that movie, that John Carpenter movie, They Live, the star was the late Roddy Piper, a wrestler, who was actually a fairly decent actor. I remember the film, but unfortunately, although it only cost $3 million to make in 1988, it only grossed $13 million, which actually is a profit in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was kind of unfortunate. I think it deserved more.
Yeah.
It was based on a story called 8 O'Clock in the Morning, a sci-fi story from Ray Nelson. Why does anyone care?
Because it's a cool movie for grade B sci-fi. Anyone who's into grade B sci-fi has got to watch that movie. It's like required reading, but it's a movie. So anyway.
And the author is still alive, by the way.
You guys were just talking a little bit about manufactured evidence, and I wanted to just remind our listeners, well, you know, you can make some money faking it, maybe more faking it than the real thing, because all we have to do is look at Ray Santilli in the Alien Autopsy film, which he raked in a pretty penny on that one. I was saying right from the beginning, this is probably some kind of a fake because of the group that I'm with. One of our members actually knew the people who helped to create it. So
there's a long history of that, though, going back hundreds of years of people. And again, not necessarily just for profit, although that might have been at least one of the motivating factors, but sometimes just for notoriety. I mean, like when mummies were taken from Egypt, particularly in the early like 1800s and only progressed from there, is people would wrap up dead like household animals and pass them off as, you know, ancient Egyptian mummies. And you wouldn't know until you unwrapped the body. So, and that's just one example of so many more throughout history. So that's another part of this monsterology kind of study, I think, is looking at is about physical evidence. And again, I think the evidence, even when it's fake, is so interesting about the motivations for creating that too.
Well, that's one of the things I really love about the academic approach to this. Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure exactly what the core reality is, but we do know that there is something strange going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to become believers in any particular view to be able to take an objective look at it and consider it from a cultural and historical perspective, because there's all this wonderful value in looking at it from that perspective. So it's just so great to see people like yourselves coming up and doing that in an academic setting. It's just wonderful.
Thank you. And again, I really enjoy it. And I think that the feedback I've received and the success of what I've been doing so far is really a testament to just that. People want to learn more about these things that seem purely fictional. And again, I don't expect anyone to listen to anything that I'm saying and be like, well, this does or does not exist definitively. I'm not looking for the definitive. I'm looking for the historical, for the possibilities, and more exploring human nature, I guess, than I am of looking at, does X monster exist? But I think the dialogue that surrounds monsters and horror and folklore and superstition has always been part of the human condition, and I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon. The monster may change, but there will always be the fear going on in humanity as well.
Well, isn't that because monsters, in a way, they force us to face our mortality in some way, shape, or form? But it seems like there's always a trade-off, too, like with vampires. Well, if you want to live forever, you're going to have to drink blood and kill people. Or if you're a zombie, well, okay, you come back from the dead, but you no longer have any personal identity. You're just some sort of clockwork orange that is being powered by who knows what with no personality anymore. Depending on the show you watch, there are zombies with personalities, I guess. Isn't that sort of a recurring theme in it all, is in the way that it makes us force our own mortality?
I think it forces us, all monsters force us, to think about our own humanity, not of morality, but also of mortality, of what it actually means to be human, what it means to be alive. I think those are persistent questions, because not all monsters are about death. Not all of them are, you know, trying to kill you or even do you harm. They're just these strange creatures that make us wonder or question the world around us. And I think that kind of questioning is something that will always continue. So as far as I'm concerned, there have been and will always be monsters.
Right. When we have new questions, we'll invent new monsters.
Exactly. Yes. New technologies, new historical situations. Absolutely. There will always be new monsters.
And here we go again with the phenomenon mirroring the worldview of the experiencer.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Wonderful stuff. Okay. Here's another one. Martians. Now, we've talked a bit about aliens, but you do have a specific episode on Martians. I'm imagining we're probably going to be talking a little bit H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds here, and maybe some other factors that we've never really considered before. Talk to us about Martians.
Martians are fascinating. H.G. Wells, I would say, made them popular, but the concept of some kind of alien creature existing on the planet Mars specifically goes back much earlier. Some people argue that this is in part due to how sometimes we can even see Mars with the naked eye, right? Like even going back thousands of years in human history, a lot of gods or important spiritual creatures or presences are associated with Mars because it is a planet that does take on a red glow that we can see. And as technology advanced and things like telescopes were invented and people started really looking at Mars, the idea of something living there became even more dominant, particularly when one person misidentified what we would now see as some of the dried up rivers or geological features of Mars as being canals. That was actually a mistranslation that led people to believe that inhabitants of the of this other world had to have created these, you know, canals to irrigate their land, and things kind of spiraled from there.
The Dead Seas of Barsoom. That's what I think of because I read the John Carter novels. They actually had a movie of John Carter, which I thought was really poorly sold. It was a pretty good movie, updated from the original story, but kept a lot of the original novels in there, the first two or three Edgar Rice Burroughs novels. But it was marketed so badly. Did you ever see it?
I don't think I ever did, or maybe just parts of it. It's probably on Disney Plus now, right? I probably could go watch it tonight.
Sure.
Maybe I should. But yeah, it's a great example of how marketing, I think, sometimes takes all horror, specifically monster movies in general, and places them in these categories where maybe they shouldn't be or they could be better appreciated.
I just don't think they understood how to sell that film, which is kind of sad. But then again, we're talking about a story that was written like in 1911.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing it up to date is difficult. Dr. Z, tell our listeners where they can find more stuff about you.
You can learn more about Monstrum on PBS.org and also on the Storied channel on YouTube, or you can follow me on Twitter at Zarka Emily.
Dr. Emily Zarka, so much fun to spend this time with you. You can find us on Twitter. If you look for the Paracast, look for two official Paracast fan clubs on Facebook. And by the way, Facebook wouldn't let us put up an ad about last week's show featuring Stephen Bassett because it was about disclosure, therefore political. And we had to go through, forget it, it's something we'll deal with maybe on After the Paracast. Speaking of which, we have a second radio show called After the Paracast that you can hear if you join the Paracast Plus. For more information, go to theparacast.plus. We offer this show also free of the network ads with enhanced audio. We also have branded merchandise, speaking of selling things. We have branded merchandise, four different Paracast logos, with T-shirts and throw rugs and pillows and who knows what else. Go to theparacast.shop to learn more about that. That's theparacast.shop. Being an old monster movie buff, I had a great time here with Dr. Emily Zarka. That name is perfect, Dr. Z. That name is perfect for being a monster.
Thank you. I can thank my Hungarian ancestors for that one.
Well, that's good. Yes. Perfect. Perfect. Dr. Z, thanks for joining us in the Paracast.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.